Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to use it.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, another active week in the Capitol. But first, WISAI was there. The emotional push led by Senator Howard Markline to label food items like coconut and almond milk and plant-based meat as not milk and not meat. A legislator and former Altoona police officer talks about suicide by gun. Legislators meet the new CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, Melissa Hughes, and a former state official says Milwaukee's rank as among the worst in the nation in home ownership by African Americans is a sin. His words. WISAI was there.
I consistently hear from farmers that they are growing increasingly frustrated with the number of imitation products that are on the market. In response, I have introduced three bills to tell the truth in food labeling. I want consumers to know what they are buying and eating. I want consumers to know the difference between the real nutritious products grown and made by our farmers versus the fake lab-grown plant-based products that are passing for milk, meat, cheese, ice cream, and other dairy products in our state. I know these bills aren't a silver bullet to solve the problems for our ag economy, but they are something we can do to protect and promote real agricultural products to consumers.
I'm here today to respectfully oppose Senate bills 463, 464, and 466. The bills that we have in front of us today prohibit two kinds of product labels, those that use meat and dairy terms on plant-based products, and those that use meat terms on meat grown directly from animal cells, commonly called cultivated meat. They're unnecessary, they're unconstitutional, and they're bad for businesses and consumers here in the state of Wisconsin.
Our vision is that every single woman in Wisconsin at every age and every stage of life is able to reach your optimal health, safety, and economic security. One really important way to get there is to pass paid family medical leave here in Wisconsin.
Many have asked me for my vision for WEDC, and that's a vision for a deep conversation among the stakeholders. WEDC can, with the support of these stakeholders, lead Wisconsin into a new future that includes success for all.
In the 1980s and 90s, I used to live on Line 61 Corridor, which today contains four pipelines. My kids used to sled down that corridor in the days before I knew what was in it. If this bill passes, kids today could face felony charges for doing what my kids did many years ago.
Well, to prevent suicide by firearm, I think first and foremost it starts with us being human beings and being accountable to one another. These people come out after the fact saying that they knew something about this person and saying, oh, I knew that they were going to do this. Or there was these cues, there was these signs, these were these signals.
Essentially what it does, Senate Bill 45 will help to blunt the impact of excess phosphorus, nitrogen, and other nutrients in surface water. It will do this by introducing floating treatment wetlands in Wisconsin statutes and adds floating wetlands to the list of activities that are eligible for lake and river management grants.
The city of Milwaukee ranks third with the lowest African-American homeownership in the nation. In a state, in a community that has some of the most accessible cost of housing that one could have. And to me, that's a sin.
The wonk in me liked spending 2 hours of my life this week listening to the Supreme Court debate. Now, I found it interesting because for the first time, the court is being asked to decide where does the powers of the legislature end or start and versus the Attorney General. The Attorney General is one of our constitutional officers, mm-hmm. but it's not prescribed in the Constitution. His duty is, the Constitution says, the Attorney General's office, his duty shall be prescribed by the legislature. So before we hear from some of the justices, your impression of that argument?
Going into the arguments, most people I talked to felt like the Supreme Court is going to uphold majority, if not all, of the lame duck laws. And that's why it's all important, right?
Because right. Lame duck
in December of last year, Republican lawmakers approved these new basically transfer powers or giving them a seat at the table, essentially, to things to kind of rein in the governor and the attorney general ahead of Democrat Tony Evers and Democrat Josh Call taking those offices. And the question has been whether they've gone too far. And the court is debating, yes, the legislature can prescribe the powers of the AG, but must there be at least some powers? Can you take everything away?
Yeah.
That was an interesting discussion. There was even a, I think the attorney for the legislature brought up the idea of a fourth branch of government, essentially, which was a little skeptical.
One justice
reception.
Said we've never recognized the fourth branch of government.
This is very, very much in the weeds, right, of these debates. But the bigger policy or bigger idea is, what's Josh Call going to be able to do as attorney general going forward with or without legislature kind of having a seat at the table or looking over his shoulder? This affects selling lawsuits. Mm-hmm. This affects when we are trying to settle a case in which a state statute is challenged, when the state legislature can intervene in a case where a state statute is challenged. What's the line going to be drawn? The Supreme Court, for the first time, could, you know, draw that line for us about where the powers are.
Which is a good time to go to a video clip of the arguments and listen to first Chief Justice Rogan Zach and then Justice Daniel Kelly seem to conflict. Please.
The Constitution envisions that the legislature cannot take all powers away from the Attorney General, or the statement in the Constitution that the Attorney General shall have powers as provided by law would make no sense at all. So you can't take everything away from the Attorney General. There's got to be something that remains.
The legislature can deprive the Attorney General of the entirety of his authority and consign him to twiddling his thumbs all day long. However, that doesn't answer the question of where that power goes after it is withdrawn from the Attorney General, does it?
The problem I'm seeing is that you're asking for more than a seat. What you're saying is not just can you intervene, but you can grind to a complete halt this any kind of litigation that the Attorney General is conducting, period. So the buck would stop with the legislature. That's not a seat at the table.
When you have a settlement that impacts the public fisc, the legislature is the one with the constitutional authority to appropriate that money. That is why not only Wisconsin, but states around the country have determined that it is logical and it is constitutional for the legislature to have a co-equal seat at the table, since it has to be the one signing the checks. The Attorney General is the lawyer, but he also has, in this hybrid situation, a co-equal say for the client. A lawyer has to take the client's directions in making certain decisions whether to settle the case.
So if the legislature wants to be heard in a court proceeding, it absolutely can seek to have its voice heard in that proceeding. But what it cannot do is force the executive branch to act in a particular way. That is what violates the separation of powers.
The legislature's position is we've got three equal branches of government. Only one is more equal than the other.
The Chief Justice said you can't take all the powers away from the legislature because the Constitution said powers of the Department of Justice, the Attorney General, must be prescribed and enacted by the legislature and governor. But then Dan Kelly said you can take all powers away, so leave the Attorney General twiddling his thumbs. Justice Dallet said you want more than a seat at the table. This just seems to be a very interesting, and my question is the traditional 5-2 conservative moderate, I didn't see that hold up in these arguments. Did you?
I'm not a lawyer. I always hesitate to try and guess what judges are going to do based off of oral arguments because sometimes they play devil's advocate and try and press an attorney on an argument to see if they can get him or her somewhere. So I don't know that I buy that they're for sure going to rule a certain way just because of what the questions they asked. What we fascinating to watch is that we've had four legal challenges to the actions taken in this extraordinary session. One was over new restrictions on early in-person absentee voting. Those were struck down by a federal judge in January this year. The second was another state lawsuit over basically when the legislature can meet. Yeah. That was basically the challenge of everything, that you guys didn't meet the proper time, therefore everything is invalid. Court threw that out, Supreme Court. A federal court rejected a lawsuit basically on First Amendment grounds saying this belongs in state court, not federal court. This is the final one. This is a separation of powers issue. Yes. And so I'm watching how that plays out and where the alliances are. Also, this is the first real high-profile case we've seen for Brian Hagedorn, new Supreme Court justice, a conservative, that pushed that majority to 5-2 from 4-3 before. How does that play in this entire discussion?
In the course of this two-hour argument, the Attorney General Call stood up and said, I am part of the executive branch, mm-hmm. which I just find very interesting. So I think the takeaway, JR, is this is a major precedent. However they rule, that will decide, as you said, the separation of powers between the Attorney General and the legislative branch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, now let's go back to, because the governor called a special session on gun, the two gun control bills that he'd like to see enacted. Let's hear the video of the governor, and then the other bookend on that issue, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald. Let's talk about that subject. Let's get into that subject that way, please.
80% of Wisconsinites support universal background checks and extreme risk protection orders, including those who are gun owners. It's that simple. Two bills that we know without a doubt, without ambiguity, this is what the majority of the people want. You know, how many times can you go against 80% of the people of the state of Wisconsin in developing policy and essentially tell them to go to hell, and then at the same time expect to be reelected? It doesn't make sense to me.
We've just now seen LRB drafts of these things, but it falls back into the category of what we imagined it would be, which is some form or fashion of the red flag, title is red flag, or universal background checks. So in both of those, in the Republican-controlled legislature, are non-starters. I don't know if his MO was to box us in or to what he thinks put us in a difficult position politically, but I just don't see any momentum. So it was very easy, because of the dialogue we had already had with members, to go back in there and say, no, we'll gavel it in because we're required to, but we'll also gavel out. If there was something, obviously, the legislature could call themselves in extraordinary. I've talked to Voss about this many times. I just don't see it happening.
We've talked about this issue a lot, but here's the trigger. The governor called, I believe, his first special session on November 7th. But you and I know, and it's important to say, that governors can call special sessions, but it does not in any way force a legislature to act,
no.
Right?
Well, the legislature has to meet, but even that, you can do it in skeletal session, we call it, where you'll have a few members in the chamber gaveling, gavel out.
Right.
The Senate's in November 5th, Assembly the 7th, or vice versa. But either way, I don't get the impression they're going to act on anything. Senator Fitzgerald actually raised the prospect of gaveling in and gaveling out, like basically the same minute, same
yes.
motion.
Yes.
It's interesting, this discussion. We've been having it for a while now about these two gun bills, about universal background checks and a red flag
law. Red flag.
Governor Evers keeps pointing to Marquette University Law School poll results showing that 80% of voters, roughly 81%, support both of those things, saying, why won't Republicans pass these bills when the public wants it? And I've asked Republican lawmakers. The governor keeps saying these are popular things. Why don't you feel pressure to do it? And they say, yeah, they're popular. But in the hierarchy of issues in our districts, they aren't number one. It's health care. It's taxes. It's, how your kid's doing in school. So, yeah, they're popular, but they're not why I might win or lose a race next fall. Two, if you look at single-issue voters on guns, more likely you're going to have people who are pro-Second Amendment in these Republican districts, right? That's a core constituency for Republicans. They don't want to alienate those folks who, for them, it's a driving issue. They don't feel a pressure that they're going to lose a seat because of these bills. For Evers, it's a different dynamic, right? He's looking at a statewide pool of voters. He goes, this plays well in my bases in the urban areas. Suburban voters, especially women, support these bills. It helps me with those guys. He's looking at it much differently than Republicans are, who are saying, look, we're worrying about assembly districts. We're not worrying about statewide view of this gun issue, and we don't feel pressure about it.
Well, and the governor said in the wake of Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald that we're going to gavel in and gavel out. To stand up and say we're going to gavel in and gavel out, that is not what the people of Wisconsin expect out of their legislative leaders. And he continues to say that, Republicans, if you continue to ignore these two issues that I'm putting forward, some of you are going to lose in November of 2020. That's a pretty broad statement.
Well, and with Donald Trump on the ballot, it's hard to see what breaks through because of the Trump phenomenon. I mean, essentially, next year looks like, to some people, a referendum on Donald Trump, period. If you like Donald Trump, you're probably going to vote Republican. If you don't, you're probably going to vote Democratic. It's hard to see a lot of ticket splitters, especially in these districts. Like, remember, these districts are made, right, comprised.
Yeah.
You're not talking about swing districts, but you're talking about districts that are strongly Republican or strongly Democratic, with about 10, mm-hmm. 12 that are within, like, even 3 and 4 points.
Yeah.
So, but there's still a risk for everybody involved here, okay? So for Republicans, if, God forbid, something happens in Wisconsin between now and next fall and they did nothing and it could have been prevented by one of these bills, how do you answer that question? For Democrats, Republicans want to make this issue not about background checks, but about confiscation. Using that language from Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald, because at this press conference about a month or so ago, governors asked about the mandatory buyback program that Beto O'Rourke has been pushing and said he would consider it.
Consider.
Didn't embrace it, didn't say he likes it,
didn't
said he
endorse
would
it, didn't say bring it on.
But because of that answer, Republicans are saying that's the true desire of Democrats. They want to take your guns.
They want to come for the guns.
And then they point to Marquette this week, which showed that more than half of voters don't like the idea of a mandatory buyback program for assault weapons, right? So if they can push that message, it inflames their base. So the risk for Evers and Democrats is if you keep pushing the gun issue, voters go, well, why aren't you talking about health care? Why aren't you talking about this or that? And also, by the way, if you start getting into these buyback things and things that aren't that popular, it alienates possibly rural voters who Democrats need to win back to climb out of their hole in assembly districts.
And Speaker Voss continues to say, we are not going to take away the Second Amendment rights. We're not going to sacrifice people's constitutional rights because one politician in Madison, listening to his very liberal constituents, wants us to do that. So, okay, yes, the governor called a special session. Nothing is going to happen. Time to move on.
Yeah, and now Robin, too, went on the radio this week and said that he kind of tried to undercut the Marquette poll, saying that if you take this and make it a different argument, and I'm paraphrasing what he said here, that if a wife suspects her husband's going to get drunk that night, goes to a judge and says he might get drunk, I want his car taken away, and the judge takes away his car, that would, and the support for that would fall apart because people say that's not fair.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's a great analogy,
right,
but that's the way that Robin's trying to redirect this discussion to try and move it away from what's popular, which is people saying, okay, if you're a threat to me or others, you shouldn't have a gun, to something like that of lack of due process, taking away property.
Right. Okay, new subject. I want to talk about the Marquette University Law School poll. For the first time, they asked, do you believe that President Trump should be impeached and removed from office? Result, 44% yes, 51% no. Now, I looked up today's NBC poll, and that's 49-49 on that mm-hmm. issue. And Charles Franklin, who directs the MU poll, again asked this question, is there enough cause for congressional hearings for impeachment? 46% enough cause, 49% not enough cause. But then when you look back, he last asked this question in April. Mm-hmm. And then enough cause, 29%. So an increase of 17 percentage points. But let's frame it, let's put context to this. In April, the Mueller report had just been delivered to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General had summarized it. 17-point gain, significant, or?
Yeah. It's also, remember, this poll was done before the latest bombshell testimony behind closed doors of several bombshells.
Ambassador Taylor?
So, look,
it was also done after the controversy over calling the head of Ukraine.
So here's the takeaway I've gotten, okay? One, the support for impeachment is building in Wisconsin, okay? Two, we lag behind the national polls in terms of the support, which shows, again, why we're such a swing state, because Trump still he's got this reservoir of support in Wisconsin that seems to be holding steady.
As we're going to see in a minute when we talk about his job approval.
The question I have is, at what point does the impeachment kind of like topple? It's spinning right now. Does it ever get to a point where it gets out of control of the president and it turns over and people go, okay, this is too much? I don't know. I've asked people, if you haven't abandoned the president already, what would finally push you away from him at this point? I don't know what that answer is.
Okay, and now let's talk about his job approval as measured by the latest Charles Franklin poll. Let's talk about the October window. The poll conducted October 13th through 17th. The president's job approval rating, 51% disapprove, 46% approve. But now, let's take that back to how it was in August. And it's very minor change. Mm-hmm. You have 53% disapproved in August. That's now 51% in October. 45% approve in August and 46% approve in October. But here's my question, JR. Between August and October, a lot happened. The president... they opened the impeachment inquiry, the revelation about the call to the president of the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. A lot happened. Why is Trump so popular?
Because the people who support him don't care about these things. They're saying there's a suspicion of the media, of Democrats, of the swamp. I kind of think about the president's support as like a reservoir, okay, with a dam that's holding it back. That dam is the economy. And so when I talk about that top spinning,
yes,
that economy would be what forces it over. If the economy goes south, if there's a recession, if people start to feel pain, you could see some springs in that dam. If that dam ever springs a leak, it could empty quickly, because if you think about the economy as what's holding together for Trump, and people are saying, okay, I can take the Twitter stuff, I don't like it, but I can kind of, you know, push it aside because things are going well for me personally. If things go poorly for you personally, that could be it. And that's the danger for Trump, is that, yeah, I mean, his numbers aren't great in Wisconsin. They're not horrible. I mean, he's right around, you know, not that far from Barack Obama in 2011. You know, he won with state by 7 points. Much different dynamic between Obama
and
Trump.
Much.
However, he's not in horrible shape if the economy stays together, if the Democrats nominate somebody who is not able to make inroads with rural, white, blue-collar voters. I mean, all these ifs out there about where he's at right now.
Well, your team at WisPolitics yesterday had a luncheon with Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, and he said that the impeachment process going forward in the U.S. House is, quote, jazzing Trump's base in Wisconsin and energizing him, right? Okay.
There's also the idea of a Trump fatigue among Republicans, that at some point they go, you know what, this is just too much. I just can't take this constant churn. Every day there's something new. I don't know how it's going to play out. I mean, the time between now and next November is an eternity in politics, right?
Yes.
Remember in 2016, Kathleen Vinehout, former state senator, talked about how in her neck of the woods, she thought there were new voters who came out because of Trump. Can Trump draw out more new voters? I mean, we all have seen that Democrats are trying to mobilize Milwaukee, unlike they did in 2016. It's realizing that they just can't show up, expect people to come out and vote in a place like Milwaukee. But Republicans looking to see, can they find more new voters out there? Are there untapped voters? What happens there? What I'm getting at is that this is going to be a hand-to-hand combat, ward by ward, all kinds of people knocking on your door, sending you flyers, ads, radio, TV, digital, because we're the eye of the storm from now until next November.
Okay, but I was surprised. Politico today did a headline on part of this poll, Charles Franklin poll, said, and the headline was Biden beats Trump in Wisconsin. And when you look inside this poll, Biden was had 50-40%. Elizabeth Warren leads the president 47-46. Bernie Sanders leads the president 48-46. So, a final note here. And when they're asked who they like, Democrats in this poll, Biden 31, Warren 24, Sanders 17. And my point is, between August and now, in August it was Biden, Sanders, Warren. Now the two and three have been reversed. Significant or no?
Well, yes and no. So this flip was within the margin of error, which for the Democratic primary poll by itself was like plus or minus 6.8 percentage points.
Okay, much bigger than 4-2 on the...
Even when you're saying that Warren leads Trump, what's within the margin of error? So yeah, she's got more support in this poll, but in fact, I'm polling geek, I got to admit that. So it's a very tight race. The Biden thing, I've talked to Republicans because last month, Democrats and Republicans last month when it was 9 points, saying that's too big a spread. Mm-hmm. It's not really there. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, most people haven't tuned into this race yet. I mean, yeah, they follow, like they know what's going on a little bit. They've heard about Ukraine, but they're not focusing on the presidential race. It's a year away. I mean, people have lives, unlike us, right?
Right.
Who like eat, live, and breathe this stuff. They're doing things like making a living, taking their kids to sports. So you got to wait until people really tune in. And there's also a poll of registered voters. Don't forget that motivation is a big thing. Who's going to turn out and vote next fall? I don't know right now. And so as you watch Charles' poll, he'll do registered voters right now and through the spring, I think, even in the summer. And then starting like next fall, he'll start to get to likely voters. That's a whole different ball of wax, because you can get into motivation. Who's going to turn out? I mean, there are people who think that Trump people are like supercharged to go out there and vote for him again. So if there's an enthusiasm gap, that'll play into this.
Last question on this poll. When you're asked, is President Trump honest? 30% yes, 65% no. Now, your answer to that is they don't think any
politicians.
They don't think any politicians.
Think about this. For Trump, I mean, what I'm trying to get at is that this is a snapshot in time. This is not a predictor of what's going to happen.
And
whatever poll that you watch at home, whatever poll you see between now and November, it is not a prediction. It is a snapshot. Keep that in mind.
Okay.
What I'm trying to get across is there is a great deal of uncertainty about what's going to happen in the next 12 months. The economy.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going to happen with that.
Yeah.
Impeachment. How's that going to play out? Well, when will it be done? I mean, we have all this drama in Washington, D.C. right now about the impeachment, but it's over at Christmas time. By March, it'll be a forgotten memory, right? Because we're going to be into the next scandal A, B, and C, or 8,422.
That's true. Okay, we got two more topics to cover before we get to your stock picks. So quickly, in 2015, 2016, the Republicans, Governor Walker, and the GOP legislators wanted to have drug testing for Medicaid benefits, food stamps, and unemployment benefits, and the federal government issued a waiver this week that would allow drug testing for some unemployment benefits. The State Department of Workforce Development, we need some clarification. Drug testing people seeking unemployment benefits is not a priority for Governor Evers. Fair statement?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Let's go to the next topic. Last week, we didn't know whether when there would be a special election in the 7th Congressional District to replace the seat given up by Sean Duffy. We now know it's going to be May 12th with a primary set for February 18th. That's the same primary date as the state Supreme Court, correct?
So February 18th is the primary, yes.
Right. Okay, and I just want to point out that whoever's elected on May 12th will be the fourth U.S. House member from Northwest Wisconsin in 67 years.
Interesting dynamic with the dates that Evers picked. Remember, he couldn't do the normally scheduled spring election like primary and general because not enough time for the military and overseas ballots, right?
Right.
He was talking about an option of February 18th for primary and May 5th for general election, or having the general election on April 18th and doing one in April for the primary. But he wanted to avoid the state Supreme Court race on the April ballot because, in theory, you might have more Republican turnout because of a Republican district that would then impact the state Supreme Court race, which Democrats hope that these presidential primary, that the excitement about that race for their nomination will help them beat Daniel Kelly. So as I'm getting at, there are all these moving pieces here.
Yes.
By picking May 12th rather than May 5th, the Gov's office tells me, they avoid the possibility of having to have another special election. Because there's a lawmaker right now running for the 7th CD, Tom Tiffany. If he wins this race, and if he wins it and had the election in May 5th, they would have a special election for his seat before the fall election.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, all these dominoes. Okay, time is getting short, but let's go to your stock reports. Rising.
So, Governor Evers, look, we hear complaints all the time for Republicans and even some Democrats about how his office is operating, about how it's hard to figure out who to go talk to about a bill. Robin Voss dinged him a couple weeks ago because they didn't seek permission, the administration, from a legislative committee about hiring people to run the state federal office in D.C.
But Cheryl told you guys yesterday he doesn't reach across the aisle. Excuse me.
Guess what? Voters don't seem to care. The Marquette poll, again, he's plus 18 in Jez's job approval rating. It's just kind of interesting that I've been asked about this because how is he so popular if he does things so poorly according to certain people around this Capitol? And the answer that I've gotten back is, because what real people care about is not what happens in this bubble that goes about one block off of each side of the Capitol. They care about their kids' schools, their jobs, their taxes, and things are going well. The right track, wrong track, pretty good. Now, it's not necessarily an inelastic thing, but another thing I heard was that, Evers has his grandfatherly kind of like aw shucks persona. People are tired after 8 years of the constant churn of Governor Walker, of Act 10, of him running for president, of all these big battles of right to work and everything else. They're just needed a break. And Evers is not Walker, who never got to like plus 18 in job approval rating.
So what they say about Obama, no drama Obama, no drama Tony Evers?
Yeah.
Okay. Next.
So Sean, we all wondered when he resigned, where is he going to land? His first stop is CNN, paid contributor.
Yeah.
I don't know how much that pays. Not sure it pays as much as being in Congress. Also, interesting debut. He is still a big fan of the president's and got nailed to the wall by a couple people because he was pushing debunked theories. Like, Sean Duffy's got a future in politics in Wisconsin, okay? He has $2 million in the bank, roughly, in his account, even after resigning.
You can't rule him out as a candidate for governor.
No, and he can't get away from Trump because the Republican Party in Wisconsin has become very Trumpish. So expecting to be a defender, one, he agrees with the president on a lot of things, and two, wants to run again someday, that Trump factor is a big deal in the primaries.
Okay, you got 20 seconds on falling.
Earnings down again compared to a year ago.
Harley?
Look, this company's got problems because of demographics. Your generation is aging out of the motorcycle demographic, right?
I gave up motorcycling a long time ago.
They're not getting in new riders as much as the people who are leaving. But there's a political angle now because of Trump and, him egging on the boycott a year ago, the tariffs, the trade war, and Democrats want to use Harley as a, hey, blue-collar Wisconsin workers, the president's not for you. because of what he's been doing in this company.
Okay. Next week, the Assembly Committee on Health will debate the suicide prevention program, and I will have a civil dialogue with Speaker Voss and Democratic Assembly Leader Hintz. That's next week. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for October 25.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.